On this episode of Teched Out by Full Stack Academy, Jeff and I discuss algorithms. We talk about their place in modern computing, ways they are commonly designed, as well as some of their well-known limitations.
What would you say an algorithm really is?
You know, over the years, I think this definition has sort of changed. The word algorithm has been around for hundreds of years. Its most common nomenclature started arising in the mid-1900s alongside of computing. And so often when we discuss computing and computers, we think of algorithms as a complete set of instructions to solve a particular problem.
Okay, but that sounds like it doesn't have to be something that happens on a computer, and it also sounds like you're saying the word has been around since before computers really hit the mainstream, at least, right? So this is a set of steps to solve a problem, even if it's not happening on a computer.
Yeah, I think that's well said, and I think that like one example I always like to think about is whenever you go to like a carnival or, you know, I don't know how often you've been hitting up carnivals recently, Jeff. But
once or twice a week.
Once
on average.
On average. Big carnival goer here.
Well, I don't get to them as much as I used to.
That'd be like a weird hobby. Like, what do you do? What's your, like, favorite hobby? Like, you're like,
Carnivals.
I travel. I hit every... Do you, like... Oh, you're, like, part of the carnival? You travel with them? Like, no. I just go to a lot of carnivals.
Right. You'd have to travel a lot too, right? Like, how often does the carnival come to your town?
Yeah,
you'd have to just be. You'd pretty much have to be a carnival groupie.
Yeah, that's. I feel like, and nobody would understand that too. People like get like band groupies or like, you know, right. But.
Yeah, guess my weight again.
Yeah. But that's a good example of like something that, you know. Let's take an example from a carnival. We could use the guess my weight example. One thing that I like to think about is like when they do the guess how many jelly beans are in this jar.
Yeah.
You know? And how do you guess how many jelly beans are in a jar? Like, that's like sort of a weird question. And there's two different approaches you could have, right? One is like, and just looking at the jar, you can't really do much. The best you can do is maybe like, think about a corner, maybe like an inch by 1 inch by 1 inch or something like that, and count how many jelly beans are there really quick, roughly. Mm-hmm. Maybe what you can see. And then estimate how many of those could fit into the entire container.
Okay. So just count in a very small area and then try and multiply by some number of areas.
Right.
Okay. Take a slice. Maybe you can see the ones on the top and roughly count those and figure out how many layers there are or something like that.
That's probably even more effective, yeah. But the issue here is like my initial definition of an algorithm was that it's complete. That what we do when we perform a set of instructions is that we come up with a way of solving something that routinely produces a solution, right? And so in this situation, we're not going to probably get the exact answer using this methodology. And therefore, it's really hard to classify this as a true algorithm, you know?
So you're saying we're not going to get the same, well, we're not going to get the correct answer, probably.
Probably.
Right? Unless we're really lucky.
Really lucky.
But also, if we did this 5 times in a row, we might get 5 different answers.
That's right.
Depending on exactly where we chose to count our initial slice, right?
Yeah. That's definitely true. And so I think that the thing here is that what we're getting is an educated guess. We're making what's called a heuristic. And it's not truly an algorithm because of the fact that the way that even though we have a series of steps and methods to solving this particular problem, it doesn't guarantee us a complete or correct solution. But in some cases, this is a good thing to do, I think, because it's performant, right? Like the only alternative here really would be to count every single jelly bean in that container, which would be unrealistic.
And cheating also
cheating, right? Because we're trying to guess here at the right. So in this case, all we have the option to do is take a heuristic. But as we'll find out, even with programming, there are certain cases where it's better to be close to right than it is to be right, you know?
OK. Gotcha. Okay. Would that be like a time thing? Like if it's just unrealistic or it would take too long to get the right answer, then you might as well just take a guess at it.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. So I think one really good example of this is the famous traveling salesman problem, which is like you need to – you're a salesman traveling the United States, which I know was part – before you were into carnivals and traveling for carnivals, you were a traveling salesman. And
it could be the traveling carnival fan problem.
The traveling carnival fan problem. A classic problem that hits the –
Every algorithm textbook is going to have this from now on.
Obviously, yes. So the problem basically is simplified like this. You need to hit every major city in the United States, and you have to do so at the lowest potential cost to you. So you have to pay for travel. You have to pay for, you know, going somewhere. All of those costs add up to be your travel costs. And how can you hit every single city in the United States without it being excessively expensive? And so one way to do this is to, like, brute force, calculate your major city and how much it would cost to get to each major city from you. Alongside, like, without repeating any major cities. So, like, let's say for simplicity purposes, all we had as major cities was like New York, Boston, and
LA,
something like that, right? Sure. It would be really, you could go ahead and calculate, okay, what would New York City to LA to Chicago cost? What would New York City to Chicago to LA cost? And you could continue this process. And in fact, this will become impossible once we have more than like 10 or 20 combinations, believe it or not.
10 or 20.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not very many cities.
That's not many cities. I know that sounds like BS, but take my word on it, Jeff. It's like this algorithm is so non-performant that that's why it's such a famous problem, is that like to calculate all of the possibilities of all of the places that we could go from any given location. We have N cities, right? N amount of cities, let's say 5 cities, right? But then from every city, we have N minus 1 combinations. So the first time we have 5 possible cities, then 4 possible locations, then 3 possible destinations, and 2. And from each of those endpoints, we need to calculate all of those possibilities.
So it sort of expands in this crazy exponential way. You just add one more city, and suddenly you've got way more combinations that you can possibly travel.
So modern computing, even if processing took like a nanosecond for an operation, it would take us like, you know, years to complete a solution of like 20, cities or more using this. So this is a problem.
Wow.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of that thing where people say, oh, how many times can you fold a piece of paper in half, right? And people always overestimate it. People think like, oh yeah, I can do it 10 or 20 times at least probably. But if you fold it just a handful of times, just the fact that it's doubling in thickness every time you fold it, there's some ridiculous thing. You fold it like 10 or 20 times and already the piece of paper is like stacked as high as a skyscraper or something.
Right.
It's really counterintuitive, but unbelievable.
This is some like Ripley's Believe It or Not stuff, you know? Remember that? Good times? Is that still around?
I don't know.
Do you remember that?
I never really watched it.
Oh, okay.
I'm hearing about it.
Okay, you had probably a more normal childhood than I did.
I'm not sure.
Maybe. I don't know. I used to buy the Guinness Book of World Records.
Yeah,
I was like,
I remember that.
Yeah, I don't know why that's related, but just so you all know, I couldn't really read that well, so I was like, I like big books and pictures, so.
And numbers.
And numbers. So I was, numbers. Yeah, exactly. Where were we? We were talking about, So back to this traveling salesman problem. It's like we could go ahead and try to calculate every single possible combination, but that is, as we just found out, almost impossible in terms of computing power. Almost impossible. In fact, impossible above a certain amount.
Right. But by impossible, you mean that it would take way too long, right? It's not like the computer is like, nope, can't do this. Sorry. It's just like it'll try. It's just going to take billions of years or something.
Literally more time than the universe has existed at a certain amount. Wow. Like, and it's not even that many. It's like 30 or 40 combinations would take more time than the entire universe.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to wrap your head around that just like calculating the minimum cost between X amount of cities or N amount of cities could take that much time.
Right. So if you've got 30 cities to travel to, it's probably not worth it to do that calculation before taking your trip, I guess, right? Right, this is one of those scenarios where we would want a good enough answer.
Yes, exactly. And so, like, and also there's combinations of the two, right? There's, like, you could use your good enough answer to guide your correct solution, which is pretty interesting. I'll give you an example. So in this case, let's just use some logic. We have New York, we have Boston, and we have Los Angeles in our example, right? And so it's pretty obvious that we should not go to the West Coast to just come back to the East Coast, right? Like, we have two cities that are on the East Coast. Let's hit both of those in tandem because it's going to be cheaper to go from New York to Boston. This is some really crazy sale. So to go from New York to Boston, right, then it will be to go from either of those places to LA and then back to the other city.
Right. Okay. So, you would never go from Boston to San Francisco to New York to LA. Like, it's just you
would
travel back and forth across the country. Obviously, that's not going to be the most efficient route.
Exactly. So we start to combine logic with our methods with our methods, and we try to combine these things so that we can actually produce something that's a reasonable answer in a quick amount of time, and that's one of the most important things here, is that if we have something that seems impossible to do, sometimes writing something that's good enough is the correct solution. That's where heuristics are really powerful.
So algorithms, then, you're saying, are step-by-step processes that we can take to find a solution to some sort of problem.
That's right.
And it's mostly what computers are doing to calculate things for us. If we step outside the world of computers for a little bit, do we have algorithms in our everyday lives? Maybe things that we wouldn't think of as algorithms, but really are these step-by-step processes? Like, I don't know, making a sandwich or something. Do we have algorithms for making a sandwich?
I don't. No. But yeah, generally speaking, yeah. Like, you can think of making a sandwich, exactly. Like, is some sort of algorithm, some sort of step-by-step instructions, like take out the bread, put layer one of peanut butter on one side, put jelly on other side. If you're crazy, put a banana in it.
Well, no.
No. Okay, that was jelly.
This is a family program,
okay.
Corey.
Yeah. But yeah. So yeah, it's very step by step. You know, even getting dressed in the morning is like, open top drawer, grab socks. You know, open middle drawer, sure. Put on shirt.
Okay.
Don't wear underwear, like that kind of thing.
Now, one thing I'm wondering here is algorithms that we have in these big computing systems are pretty complicated, right? It's not just always going to give you the same answer, right? It's going to depend on certain things, right? Like, there are algorithms that underlie Netflix's recommendation system, but not everybody sees the same movies in their queue. It depends on what movies you've watched before, right? So it seems like there's got to be some sort of branching logic built into these algorithms. And even when you're getting dressed in the morning, I mean, what if I look in my closet and I don't see that I have any clean button-down shirts? I might say something like, if there are no clean button-down shirts, then look in the drawer for a clean sweater or something.
Right.
Can that still be an algorithm at that point, or are we getting more toward the heuristic side?
No, absolutely. That is an algorithm. Like, still, you have provided the step-by-step considerations that are needed for that algorithm. And, you know, let's make a really simple comparison here, I think. Like, you go to a restaurant, and if you're in New York City, you're paying, I think it's like 8.75% sales tax or something like that on food. And when you get a bill, every place, even if it's like a chain, right, knows to bill you at that 8.75% and gives you the total, right? So they have their subtotal, and then you have some tax, and then you have some output, right? We can think of, like, the algorithm that goes into doing this. It's pretty simple, right? We can think of some routine. I'll call that routine a function. A function is just a series of operations that takes some input and produces some output.
Okay.
And so in this case, the input would be the subtotal of the bill, along with that state's tax. And the output that we would produce would be dependent on the tax, right? So, like, we could then calculate the result, final total, based off of the tax, right, based off of the cost of the meal. And in addition to that, maybe even have something like user input, like, oh, I want to give a tip on this check, right? These are things that we've all done before. And so we can start to think about how these things affect us in our everyday lives, even when they do bridge the gap between computing and kind of our normal everyday processes.
Okay, so in this restaurant bill example, you're saying there are inputs and outputs, and we can kind of narrow it down to just a few inputs that matter for generating the output. You said there's the total cost before tax, I guess, the tax rate, and then maybe you want to factor in the tipping percentage that you tend to leave. And if you sort of adjust those numbers, you'll get different outputs. But if you code up some sort of formula, you can write a formula, even a mathematical formula, I guess, that takes those inputs and combines them together into a consistent output. And that's a function or an algorithm or a routine, you said. What is it exactly?
I mean, I think all of those are sort of valid ways of explaining what we are trying to do here. In this case, this is an algorithm for computing the total cost of a meal, right? Given certain inputs. And algorithms, in fact, can have requirements, right? You can't just always use an algorithm to calculate something without input. In fact, that's very rare to do. Even in our initial example of the traveling salesman, we had to provide cities with flight costs between each city. So these things can require inputs, and their outputs are what they reliably produce. Given the same input, you will hopefully produce the same output.
Gotcha. So we have to make certain assumptions about what kind of data is coming in through these algorithms, these functions, right? We can't say, oh, your total was $16 and the tax rate is 7.5% and the tip percentage is cheese.
Yeah.
We're not going to get right. good output from that input.
I'd be very happy if I got tipped in cheese.
Yeah.
I love cheese.
It depends on what kind of cheese.
Do you have a favorite cheese, Jeff?
Oh, man. I like cheddar. I mean, just like cheddar. Really, really sharp cheddar.
Sharp good cheddar.
Vermont sharp cheddar.
Vermont. Yeah. You such yeah. a... New York makes pretty good cheddar.
It does, actually.
That's yeah, true. New York, that's yeah, like,
but,
you know.
But the Vermont stuff.
Vermont cheddar. I don't think I've ever had Vermont cheddar.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think I'm big enough sometimes. Cheese snob, but I'm pretty... I'm a cheese snob.
Yeah.
At some level.
I like cheese. All right. What's your favorite cheese?
Oh, God. Thanks for asking, Jeff. I don't know. I guess like a really good aged Gouda cheese. Mm-hmm. Like really, like give me the mold. Give me that mold. I don't know if it's. I don't really know. I'm not too well versed on like how cheese works. Like what they do. Yeah. I guess they cut the mold off before really they either. Give it to you, or you eat the mold.
I think
you are the mold.
Isn't blue cheese just mold?
Yes.
Mostly, right? Blue cheese is great. That's one of my favorites.
I hate. I can't. Really? Maybe the fact that it's like too, like it's true. They like call it mold. Yeah. I think that's it for
it's
me.
It's like really kind of pungent too. You know, it's smelly.
Oh, this is.
I'm just imagining like blue cheese and bacon on a burger. Oh, I'm salivating. It's what? 9 in the morning.
But cheddar on burger. Oh, what is wrong with you? What's wrong with you? So Jeff's algorithms regarding food are sort of messed up, is what we're getting from this. Great, yeah. So that's algorithms, I think, in a nutshell, is really getting into coming up with some sort of deterministic solution to a particular set of problems. And given some input, we can produce some output reliably. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Very, very cool. There's one other thing. So we talked a little bit about like these logical statements, right? We talked about if this thing is true, then do that. But if this other thing is true, then do this other thing, right? Button downs or sweaters, right? Or in my Netflix queue, if I said that I liked, I don't know, if I said that I liked Moana, then show me more Pixar movies or something, right? So we have logical conditions, if this, then that. Are there other key ingredients that tend to go into these sorts of algorithms, these sorts of procedures, other than just if else?
Sure. So this sort of gets into some more nitty gritty here, but there might be a situation where you want to repeat something, or we call this looping, right? Which is like, given a particular problem, continue to do something until something is no longer true.
Gotcha. So like in a recipe or something, right? It might say, whisk these ingredients together until the mixture is smooth.
Perfect.
Just keep doing that motion over and over and over again until we've met some condition.
Sure. And I think that's actually really good that you kind of broke it down like that, right? People tend to think of algorithms as like these enormous problems, these enormous input-output machines. But they're not. Oftentimes, really good algorithms are broken down into a bunch of sub-algorithms. Like, think about that cooking recipe you just said, right? It's like, there are multiple steps in this algorithm, right? Which is like, let's say, crack egg. That's its own function. That's its own algorithm. Crack an egg. Once you've cracked an egg, you've completed this entire function that you had to do. Hmm. Crack the egg, right? Then it's like add mixture, add butter, whatever, into the bowl or something like that, right? And then the third step here is whisk until it is, one texture or something like that. And what's really cool about that is that we can now pick out pieces of that and place it with other recipes, in this case, or other algorithms, right? The whole whisk until it's one texture, right? Whisk until it's one texture. That cannot just be applied to our egg cracking butter combination situation here, but other different combinations that you might be cooking in other recipes as well. And so this actually gets into this idea of functional programming, which is that like, everything is a function. At the end of the day, we can break things down to these really, really, really small pieces.
Yeah, right. I love this idea of combining small recipes into a larger recipe. It's for some reason I'm thinking of Eggs Benedict right now, probably because I'm hungry and I love Eggs Benedict.
Well, you should eat before these talks, because I feel like we bring up food
or,
on...
Or definitely after them.
Definitely after.
So with Eggs Benedict, it's one recipe, but it's sort of a combination of several smaller recipes, right? You've got a recipe for making a poached egg, and then you've got a recipe for making the hollandaise sauce, and another recipe for, I guess, the ham, right? And the English muffin, and then you kind of combine them all together. So you've got these small things, which it sounds like you're saying could be considered functions themselves, right? Poached egg, that's a function. And then the way that you combine them together gives us this bigger combination, which we might call the Eggs Benedict function.
Right, right. So functions themselves or algorithms themselves, which I'm using sort of interchangeably here, can be made up of other subroutines, subalgorithms, or subfunctions.
Right. And yeah. We can even combine that, I guess, right? We could take the Eggs Benedict function and plug that into a piece of the breakfast function, which also includes the coffee function, which we could break down into the grind beans and whatever, right? Is life just a function? Is that where we're going?
I think we are just in one big computer simulation.
We're living that in an algorithm.
Is just there's no lag.
Yeah, very little.
Very little.
Anyway, every once in a while I see a glitch, but
yeah,
it's pretty rare. I'm impressed.
You know what? You know what's deja vu, I feel like, is the system glitching.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Wasn't that something in The Matrix, right? Didn't they say deja vu is like when something goes wrong in The Matrix?
Maybe. Maybe they did, Jeff. Maybe they did.
I mean, maybe that's what it is. Who knows?